in eschatological events. This is actually class number 21 of a series we began way back in February called Understanding the Times. We talked about just culture as a whole, the fourth generation, if we're there or not, but here's what the Bible lays out. We read through a lot of the prophets describing the fourth generation. And then as we kind of wrap that up, we moved into what will it look like somebody's culture, somebody's generation is going to bump into the eschatological events. Now, if we're there or not, and again, this is I've always the default with this, you cycle towards those end time events right here. Any generation, it could have been the first generation, it could have been Nebuchadnezzar, it could have been Nero, it could have been World War I, but then all of a sudden things stop and you cycle back and do it again. Satan's been trying to bring the Antichrist possibly since the beginning, but whoever's holding it back continues to do so till he's taken out of the way, and we might be right here, and then we're just going to cycle back, and it's going to come back again, you know, another 20, 30, 40 years. But eventually, somebody's going to hit that last seven-year mark and enter into nothing you can do about it. You can't pray it away. I mean, these things are set. Daniel said, these things are set. I mean, it's just the reason we're told about it is so you're not like, well, what's going on? And everybody loses their faith because things have gotten out of control. So that's why eschatological events are important. Life is tough anyhow. I mean, just going through life, we have trouble, and God says we'll have trouble. So just because there's trouble doesn't mean something's wrong. And just because you move into some kind of disastrous situation culturally or worldwide doesn't mean something's wrong. It means, you know, God is still on the throne. He's just got to move. The whole idea is he's moving through history with the plan of salvation. He's going from the Garden of Eden to the New Jerusalem, and when we get there, there's going to be the home of righteousness, everlasting righteousness, and it's where we all would want to be. We all want to be there. It's just this process that he's going through to get there. Now, we talk about the last 7 years. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, not any time, saying, well, it could be, could not be, because I think we've established it. And again, if you would disagree with what I'm saying, or you know, the whole thing, or little bits and pieces, you disagree, that's fine. Just consider it this way, like a presentation of, like when you look at different models, you know, you've already got, like, here's your seven-year model. You've got the rapture here, the pre-trib. You've got the mid-trib. You've got the post-trib. And then after that, you've got the 1,000 years. When does the 1,000 years, oops, that's 100 years. 1,000 years. When does that 1,000 years begin? Well, if you're premillennial, which I am, then Jesus Christ has to return for the 1,000 years to begin. If you're postmillennial, then you're going to have the 1,000 years of reign on the earth of peace established probably by the church, by Christians as they take over the world's governments and establish peace. And then after 1,000 years, postmillennial, then Jesus returns. So, I mean, I've studied that model. I disagree with it. But if someone were presenting that, and I'd be like, you know. So, and then there's other things. There's amillennialism. So if there's something I'm saying that you don't agree with, that's you certainly are free to disagree and think different thoughts. But don't get frustrated. I'm always afraid someone would be frustrated. It's like, oh, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. Well, I'm not brainwashing you. You just sit there and go, I don't agree with that. Okay, I mean, it's like it's free. And so just take it as an educational class. It's like I'm being educated on false eschatology that's circling around in generation word. I can see why that's wrong. But nonetheless, so anyway, I think there's going to be a seven-year period at the end, and we've talked about that. Now, again, I'm going to talk about this little chart right here, just lay this down, because we're talking about some eschatological events. During this 7 years, the final 7 years, is going to begin with a treaty with Israel, where they're going to be given the Temple Mount back. They're going to apparently build the temple. It's going to be a seven-year peace treaty with the Antichrist. Now, if they know exactly who it is, some world leader is going to give them a seven-year treaty. Somehow they're going to have control of it. Right now, it'd have to involve Islam or the Muslims somehow giving it to them. I mean, it just has to, because they're the ones that have control of it. Or someone's going to have to invade Israel, take control of the Temple Mount, and then make a seven-year treaty with Israel. But there will be a treaty right there. Now, if you're pre-trib, boom, you're gone. You'll never see this. I'm thinking rapture takes place right here, and I'm going to teach it that way. It's going to take place later on. So I'm anticipating, now I didn't used to think this way, but I'm anticipating that I will see, if we enter the 7 years during my lifetime, that I will see this take place. Israel going to throw, I mean, you're not going to have to wait for the temple to be built. It's going to happen that day. I mean, they're ready to move up. They've got forklifts. They've got altars ready to move up into place. It will take place. If they sign a treaty, by the time the sun comes up here in Iowa, they will already be on the, if they sign a treaty at 8 o'clock in the morning in Israel, by the time you're out of bed, there's already smoke coming up off the Temple Mount. It's like, whoa, I didn't know that. Well, that's how fast they're coming. Or at least the evening sacrifice will be offered that day. And again, you know how you've got Bible truth, you've got to put some pieces together, then you just know facts that, you know, they're ready, and when they get the treaty, they're going to go into it right away. So there's some assumption there. Okay. And then there's going to be this time of the seals in the book of Revelation. But Daniel talks about, this is one of the things that we will see as I read through these verses. We're looking for events. And I've got on that top of the page, I'm going to start in Matthew today. And I've got certain events right there, and I've got them paralleled. And so everything has different pieces. Daniel says some things, Matthew, or Jesus says some things, and Matthew records them. Luke says some things, and he records that. Paul picks up on it. John refers to it. And then there's other things in Isaiah and other prophets. And they all overlap, and you can kind of get a more of a complete picture. But there should be some things that are very solid. And that's kind of like these events, like right here, what we'd call the first 3.5 years. Because at the halfway point, the Antichrist sets himself up in the temple. He takes over. He breaks the 7-year treaty. So there's a clearly 3.5-year marks. And you can argue about anything, but I can't even entertain the thought that this isn't accurate, because 7 years at the halfway mark, it's called, 3.5 years, or 42 months, or 1,260 days, or times and half a time. And so you get that multiple ways of getting these numbers. So there's a 3.5-year period here, 3.5-year period there. That's not just guessing. That's not just speculation. That's repeated throughout Daniel and Paul and Revelation. Now, during these seals right here, this is going to be a time of peace for Israel. Peace. They're offering sacrifice. They're on the Temple Mount. This is a great time. So this is a time of happiness for the Jews. So this is not anything the Jews are, and people worry about this. They say, well, how can you, and again, this is a legitimate complaint, especially if you get deep into dispensationalism. How can you have the church on earth while God is working with Israel? Now, let's ask a fair question. Is God working with Israel during this 3.5 years? Well, the Antichrist made a treaty with them. They're back on the Temple Mount. But understand, they do not find the Lord until over on this side is where they meet the Lord. They weep. When something happens, they see something, and they mourn for him like they mourn for the one they pierced. Zechariah says it clearly, like they've lost their son. Now the Antichrist comes after them. Now they go into hiding, going either to the mountains over into Jordan and then down into Edom. And now this is where it says a fountain will be opened to them. They're going to be washed. Paul even says, and all Israel will be saved. That takes place here. So this is Israel right here, where they are in God's plan and protected, maybe even to the extreme that they're protected here, like they were protected in Egypt during the plagues. Because now you're going to see the trumpets and the bowls be poured out from heaven by God on the earth, on the kingdom of the beast. So this is the time of wrath right here. And during the time of wrath, Israel is protected. And we know that the church, the believers, Christians, will not suffer the wrath of God. Which means now you've got exactly what dispensationalists want to have and argue for pre-trib. You've got the rapture when the sign of the Son of Man appears, and Israel sees it, mourns, and is sealed, and they go into hiding. You now have the reestablishment of Israel for the last 3.5, and you've got Israel going up, or the church going up to meet the Lord, and you've got a definite break, if you want to have that break. But again, you don't need to get too stressed out about it, because if you go back to 70 AD when the temple was burnt and Jesus was resurrected in 30 AD and the church began, you've got the church here starting and going this way, while you've got Israel coming this way and then the temple being burnt. So you've got a 40-year overlap. Even the disciples met on the Temple Mount. Even Paul went up and offered sacrifices. There was still a 40-year overlap of church activity on the Temple Mount while the smoke was coming off the altar. So it's like, well, they can't be there at the same time. The book of Acts. I mean, that's not even good. It's like, well, we've got evidence of a pre-trib rapture. You can't have Israel and the church operating at the same time. Okay, I know the temple, the curtain was torn in 30 AD, and the way was made, and in a sense, maybe God's presence left the temple, if you want to say that. But then you're going to have to say the same thing here. This, while Israel's worshiping on the Temple Mount under the oversight of the Antichrist, that's hardly God reestablishing Israel for fellowship, because the Antichrist is overseeing and going to break the treaty. So keep that in mind as you go through it. Anyway, this time right here, as we look at it, we're going to see the appearance of the Antichrist with a treaty with Israel. You're going to see now the seals, and those seals are man's design. I mean, Jesus breaks the seals, and some people want to consider that the beginning of the wrath, and you can, except what you see is activity of the Antichrist or activity of man. It's war, it's plagues, it's famine, it's rational. It's rationing of supplies, where there's a place where bread is very expensive. You know, a pint of barley and a pint of wheat, or however, like a quart of wheat, you know, for a day's wage. But then it says, but don't damage the oil or wine. It's like, you know, for years. I mean, really, I go back in the 80s and I'd be like, you know, and trying to figure out what is an oil and wine, oil, Middle East. It must be the oil refineries. It's like, no, it's not petroleum oil. It's olive oil. It's food. It's stuff they use to cook with or bake with. It's the oil and wine. It's what you'd anoint yourself with, part of it. It is the elite. It is the wine and the oil is the fine products, but the barley is for the middle class that's now being driven in poverty. So what you have right here, you're selling these cheap bread items for gold to the masses, but hey, don't mess with the oil and wine. Why? There's no oil or wine. Well, yeah, there's oil or wine. That's why it says don't break it. Don't damage it. Don't open it up. We'll get it out when we want it. So that I think you've got a clear, in those seals, you've got a clear break where you've got the masses of people driven into poverty, but you've got an elite class which is going to become the beast base of operation, dominating the people on the earth, even putting a mark on them, dictating to them what they can and cannot do. So it's not like necessarily everybody wants to join. It's that there's oppression going on, and there is rationing. And there's going to be execution. It's very clearly, you can see in one of the seals, there's the martyrs under the altar. And how long must we wait? And the Lord says, a little while until the full number have come in like you did. In other words, God is, again, you can't preach this to the modern Western church because they just, you know, they would just break out and cry and leave and go somewhere else. But this is a time of persecution of the church. And when even in heaven, under the altar, they're crying, how much longer, Lord? They're asking, just like the prophets, Jeremiah, Habakkuk, or what's going on? They're even in heaven going, how much longer? He says, a little while, and he tells it very clearly, until the full number have come in, the rest of them have come in like you did. And they're the martyrs. In other words, they're martyring, it's like they're trying to wake God up. It's like, no, God is, he's telling you, there's going to be huge amounts of martyrdom right here. You're going to die for the sake of Christ. You're going to die testifying. It's like, what, we're going to die? No, you missed the whole point. You're going to die testifying. You're going to be given a front row seat to an audience, if it's a small local audience, if it's Paul in Nero's court to the imperial court, and you're going to get to have a chance to not be devoured by the lion and be able to say, Jesus is Lord, his kingdom is coming, he's on his way back. And they're going to hear it. The whole world, it's right here, you hear those verses, and the whole world will hear. The whole world will hear the testimony. It's like, and again, that's part of the church going off evangelizing, but right here, as they're going door to door around the world persecuting the church in this first 3.5 years, while Israel's having the time of their life and they've been restored the kingdom, they're going to take over the world, they're over here, you got a treaty with the Antichrist who's ruling and reigning. The church is testifying, Jesus is coming, and the testimony of the kingdom of God will go to everyone. Everyone is going to hear it. Because if the persecution is local to national to universal, there's going to be execution and court cases. All they're going to be, it's not just going to be Paul and Nero's court like it was in the book of Acts and in 2 Timothy. It's going to be everybody who's going to face up and hold to their faith. Now, again, one of the things that will take place, Paul says, the rebellion must occur. The man of lawlessness will be revealed, and then the rebellion. And the rebellion is not the conservatives rebelling against the police state. If you want to play that, you can. The rebellion is a departure from something you were committed to and you've switched. We've talked about it before. It's changing of a political alliance. It's saying, I believe it's a religious, I'm in this religion, and now I've turned my back on that religion. Most likely that rebellion is flat out the denial of Christ. There's a huge falling away, an apostasy. And the Western church, I mean, we can't make it any more perfect. We just bring in masses in. Come on in. We got free potato salad. We got coffee. We've got, you enjoyed the nightclub music? Well, come on in. We've got the same thing on stage this morning. It's like, we love this life. Well, now we're going to start killing people after the service. It's like, I'm not really committed to this church anymore. I'm going to go somewhere else. And there will be a huge falling away, I would believe. Again, you understand there's things that the Bible says clearly, and then there's us trying to overlap it. Is what's happening in our time? And then it's me tying all the pieces together. And so you understand me tying the pieces all together may be a waste of your time. Overlaying this culture right now, if it all passes and it's not another 200 years, well, we wasted our time. But we're doing the right thing because Jesus says, stay alert, keep watching, don't go to sleep. And the problem would be, I've got to be careful as I present these things and not become too, you know, dramatic and too speculative and too absolutely setting dates and stuff. That would be a mistake. But I'd rather be alert and looking and seeing Jesus coming back behind every tree than be asleep or be drunk and not know he's coming, because Jesus talked about, though he didn't say, and some will be so excited about my coming, they'll get exaggerated, just stay cool, just relax. You know, he did say no one knows a day or hour, but he didn't get upset because you're so aggressive and so excited, because that will all temper out. As life goes on, you'll learn how to temper those things. But if you just fall asleep, you're not interested, you deny he's come back, he's all that. People have been saying that for years, and you just go along with your life. He was very upset with those people. In fact, a lot of times they lost their rewards in the parables or were cast into outer darkness because in the parables. So again, it's much better to be talking about these things, trying to speculate, realizing you got to be careful, than to say, well, this just causes confusion, and let's just talk about how to have our best life now and have a happy marriage and a nice home and have our finances organized. It's like, now those things are part of the institutions God created, but this is not something we should neglect. Nonetheless, I think this will be a time of persecution. So what we'll see as we look at these events is the coming of the Antichrist, some kind of a treaty being signed, Israel going back to the Temple Mount being happy, and then you got these seals, which is war and poverty and rationing of food, martyrdom, and then even Paul says, those of us who remain, and that word remain is survive, will meet the Lord in the air. And again, those who remain, you can study that word. It doesn't just mean those who are alive at that time. It means those who have survived the war, who've made it through to this point. All of our comrades have been martyred, but we're here. So when we talk about a rapture, it may not be, I mean, yeah, people, well, you got it right in Revelation. This great multitude comes out of the tribulation. So it is a large multitude. But at the same time, it's a multitude that's been thinned out by martyrdom, I would assume. Okay, now at the halfway point, the 3.5 year point, very clearly, there's going to be, the Antichrist is going to reveal himself in the sense that he's going to set himself up in the temple claiming to be God. Now that's important, and I haven't wrapped my mind around that. He's claiming to be God. Because it's like if I want to have like an Islamic beast, Islamic Antichrist, that's hard to imagine a Muslim saying they're Allah. That'll make sense. One thing what Daniel talked about is that the Antichrist will worship a god unknown to his fathers. And it's like, well, who could that be? Well, if you go back to Antiochus Epiphanes and that time, there were certain gods that the Romans had worshipped and the Babylonians, but the coming of the Greeks, there's a few new gods popped up. You could name it, you know, some new gods, that, and the Antichrist would align himself with a god that had never become a national god before. That could be talking about Antiochus Epiphanes back in the Maccabean Revolt. But if we're looking here at this time, it's still a future event. Now remember, there's some parallels from the Maccabean Revolt or Antiochus Epiphanes and the Antichrist. Those prophecies overlap, but the Antichrist continues with some things that the Antiochus Epiphanes never did in 168, 165, that time period. But when it says worship of a God unknown, that may actually be, like we were talking last Monday night after a Bible study, may actually be, if you look at all the gods, you know, the gods, the Greek gods, the Roman gods, the pagan gods, if it may be something from Babylon or Assyria, those are all, according to Old Testament understanding and Paul's teaching in the New Testament, those were rulers and authorities in heavenly places making some kind of manifestation. We just see them as, well, there's El or Baal. That's a Canaanite god. That's in the Oriental Institute Museum. That's a little gold about this big right there. I know I shouldn't have a pagan god sitting up here in Bible study, but there it is. It's about that big. He looks ugly. It's old. It's made out of gold. But the thing is, what was behind it was some kind of spiritual power, some kind of a ruler or authority, the rulers and authorities in heavenly places manifesting to their people, and they would try to manipulate them with sacrifices. Nonetheless, if they are rulers and authorities, spiritual forces of forces of evil in the heavenlies manifesting in these pagan gods, this god that he worshipped would be one unknown to anyone else. This would be potentially a spiritual power, a ruler or authority in the heavenly places that has never manifested or allowed, you know, come into worship by in Assyria or Babylon or Rome or Greece, Persia. It's a new demonic manifestation. It's, again, now when I say demonic manifestation, I do distinguish between angelic powers and demons as different classes, because I think demons may be part of the Nephilim that have fallen in disembodied spirits. But the rulers and authorities, this would be possibly a spiritual power manifesting in Antichrist at this time that he's getting his power from. It's also called the God of Fortress, and so there's going to be a lot of war and military force, and that's, you know, that's not, I don't want to say confusing, but that's, I mean, you go up here, Babylon, there's Assyrians taking away all the, those are all gods right there, being, see, they're being carted off by the Assyrians, taken back to Nineveh. Those are all pagan gods coming out of Syria. All the Syrian gods, when they'd conquer land, they would just take all the gods and take them back to their home country, so they get more gods in their temple, because they figured, if you're worshiping these gods, you didn't do a very good job, because you're getting destroyed. We'll take care of this god. And they just take them home like lost pets. Because, I mean, the reason, it's very clear, it was just basic logic. The reason we can burn your city down is you got your god's mad at you. Now, he probably got some power, and we don't want to waste it, so come on, we'll take you home. And they start feeding them, you know, and giving them little offerings and stuff at a little temple, and they just got them, they thought themselves, we're just collecting all the gods from all these nations, because all these nations failed to please their gods, and we'll take care of them here in our little sanctuary. And so that's what they're doing. They're carrying the gods back. They're not crushing them. They're not. If you want to see people crush and destroy gods, you know who's doing that. That's Joshua, you know, coming into the land of Canaan. He's crushing the guy. You can see him at Hazor, the burnt, crushed parts of gods that they had in their palace. They've excavated those. But nonetheless, he'll come into power right here, calling himself God, and that's when, shortly after that, the Jews will leave. Jesus says, when you see that happen, flee. And so they'll take off. The Jews will run to the mountains and everything back. Now, they're confused. Now, understand, they're confused. They're going from happy, like everything's working out. We knew it was going to work out, because they're looking for a political leader. They're not looking for Jesus Christ to come back, the Son of God. They're looking for some power player to give them the Temple Mount. They are. That's their politics now. But right here, they're like, they're confused. I mean, everything was working, and now the guy we made a treaty with, I can't believe it. He lied to us. Okay. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the world and leaders. It's like he lied. And so now they're off and confused. The church is being slaughtered. And that is where if I'm correct at the timing of the rapture, that's where the sign of the Son of Man appears. The church is gone. They're delivered. Israel sees their Messiah. Oh, my gosh. It's not the president of the United States or this European leader here or some guy that's in charge of the Muslim community. It's actually the Son of God, just like the Creator. And they're like, then they mourn for one that they pierced, like it says in Zechariah, and they go into hiding, and that's where 144,000 are sealed, and they're protected. They're going to go in hiding, and then they'll return and meet the Lord in Jerusalem. And at that time, now you got the worst days on the earth. It says the days, no days like this have ever been since the days of the nations, which nations began after the flood. There's no worse days on earth than the flood of Noah. I mean, it was a really bad day. Well, it's not going to be worse. Oh, the fall of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the worst day in history. The fall of Jerusalem was the fall of Judea. It didn't affect Rome, except they got a lot of gold and slaves are, you know, two for a buck. I mean, it was a great day in Rome. It took them a few weeks to get there. But it's like, it was a bad day for Israel. The flood was a bad day for the whole world. This is going to be the worst days since the days of the nation, since nations were formed. This is not the worst days. This may be the greatest persecution, but this is God himself, Jesus Christ. They say it. They say, hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. And they all go hide in caves because here he sits right here and they're going to go hide because they know what's happening. And he begins to pour out the trumpets and the bowls, and they're cursing God. And it gets to the place the last few moments, last few weeks. I mean, human existence, it's going to go extinct. I mean, there's no water. There's the sun is scorching people. They've got boils. They all got the vaccination, so they're all breaking out all kinds of diseases, growing little horns and stuff. I don't know. I just threw that in to be stupid. But, I mean, there is going to be the mark of the beast. The mark of the beast, there is going to be something, you know, that's going to be similar to some universal requirement that you're going to have to get this mark. It's a, you know, if we're going to say today, if we're going to say, like I said before, if we're going to go to back to the 70s, the mark of the beast is right here. It's the barcode. Don't buy anything with the barcode on it. It's the mark of the beast. I've held to that since the 70s. Never buy anything with the barcode. No, I mean, you can't. But again, that's not the mark of the beast, but it's like it's leaning towards it where you can scan stuff. Well, now we've got, you know, chips, you know, or whatever that you can use. Is that the mark of the beast? Well, maybe. This could have been the mark of the beast, but it's a joke now because that's not the mark of the beast. But now chips, well, that could be it. But you don't know. It could get more developed beyond. We don't know where it's going to end. So again, we're moving towards, like I say, it's cycling, circling. It could have been some kind of a tattoo. In fact, mark, it refers to a tattoo. I mean, they could have had a system, in fact they did, of marking people in the Roman world, and it could have been that. But it's not the mark of the beast because Nero died. You know, we cycled back. It was like, eventually we're going to get there and we're going to have the real mark of the beast. And it's like, what it is, you don't know. It says it calls for wisdom and insight. And that would require God revealing some things to you and you actually having some insight of actually seeing it. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not there. And God's not revealing it because it would just be a cool Bible trivia point. It's like, hey, guess what I know? It's worthless right now. But the day is coming. So to say you know what the mark of the beast is, it's like saying, I know when Jesus is coming back. I know he's coming back. I know there's the mark of the beast. I got some, you know, I understand what the culture will be like, what the climate will be like. I know kind of what, you know, I can't buy or sell. I mean, which makes you pretty much, where are you going to live? I mean, especially in a modern society in a city. It's like, I'll just eat grass in my front yard. I mean, you're dead. I mean, it's like you can't survive unless you get the mark of the beast. So again, you know some of those things, but to say it's the vaccination, it's like, yeah, that's just a joke. Okay. Anyway, here are those bowls of things. Then there's going to be the return of the Lord right here, and this is where there will be the wars and a series of wars take place. If I could sum this up, and I've spent way too much time saying this, the Antichrist will be revealed. Halfway point, he's going to break the treaty. The first half, Israel's happy. The church is being persecuted. There's going to be a huge break in society with some elite rising up and just crushing everyone else into poverty, into a slave state, forcing them to be marked with the mark of the beast. And then once he sets up in the middle here, there's going to be, I think, the rapture, the gathering of the saints. Israel then will not be gathered. Not that there won't be Jews going up in the rapture if they believe in Christ, but those who are waiting for or thinking they're going to get a political leader and they've rejected Christ, this is now their chance. And again, it seems like the whole nation will be saved. Paul says all of Israel will be saved. Again, you got to kind of figure out what that means. And there's 144,000 is mentioned. And then they're going to meet him in Jerusalem for a battle, and there's going to be a series of battles. Now, with that being said, we've got some highlights. When we read through these verses, and I'm going to start in Matthew 24, and you should hear this repeated. When we read Matthew, when we read Luke, when we read Paul, we should see them starting here and saying this. Now, if you went to a Bible study tomorrow night and you went to someone else's family room and they had a little diagram and they start teaching it, they would present something similar, but it would be different. Maybe they'd emphasize different things. Maybe they'd skip some things I've spent too much time on, but you'd be able to overlap them. Then if you went somewhere else again later on, had someone else explain it, it would be a little, maybe they'd approach it from a different angle or something, but they'd be saying the same thing. And that's what the thing is, we're talking about the same seven-year period in all of this, so we should see them emphasizing certain major events. You can't talk about the 70th week without pointing out a few of the highlights, so there should be some similarity in there. So with that being said, I'm going to read Matthew 24, and I'm in the NIV, Matthew 24, and again, you know the story, the background, that Jesus has just left the temple for the last time. It's 30 AD. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came to him to call attention to its buildings. Again, that's a great temple. Again, the disciples have no clue what's about to happen. They have no clue. They don't know the crucifixion's coming. They don't know the fall of Jerusalem's coming. In fact, we can prove they think Jesus is just days away from taking over the kingdom of Israel and driving Rome out and establishing it. They think they're standing on the doorway the day before the eve of the kingdom of God. You understand what I mean? Here's the Messiah. He's clearly the Messiah. He doesn't say he's the Messiah. And now he's in Jerusalem, and they're here. You put the building's pretty nice. We got things pretty set up for you. And they're thinking, you know, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. No one knows the day or hour, but it's probably this week sometime. He's going to just enter into his glory, and they're just going to come right along with him. In fact, they're even asking for a position, even applying, giving him applications. It's like, you know, we don't want to be presumptuous, but we do know it's going to happen pretty soon. I'd like you to consider me for this position in your kingdom. In fact, they even brought their mom along as a character witness. It's like, yeah, I'd like both my sons in there. It's like, so they're ready. I mean, they're not like, you know, you think these guys are like, you know, these holy men with great insight. They're thinking about their position in the new kingdom. And so they're pointing out, and so I mean, give yourself some slack. Okay, give me some slack. It's like, I don't think Galen knows what he's talking about. Well, neither did Peter right here, okay? So just let's all kind of work on this. Okay, he says, they call his attention to the buildings. He says, do you see all these things? So yeah. I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left upon another. Every one will be thrown down. And they're like, what, we're going to rebuild the whole thing? I mean, it's like, now he's talking about 40 years. In 40 years, he's going to have this place plowed. It's like, now if they understood, it's like, so the kingdom's not coming next week. It ain't coming for at least 40 years because we got to tear this place down. Oh, so then it'll come after that. So once the temple got stored, now we can start talking about eschatology again. I mean, they don't know. So they didn't say anything about it because it's kind of a hot moment. There are a lot of people, a lot of crowds. You don't want to start talking about not being vaccinated while you're at Hy-Vee. So they're talking about the temple being torn down, Romans. It's like, so they're like, they wait until they get out on the side of the Mount of Olives by themselves. So as Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, and then three questions, when will this happen? And that could be the destruction of the temple, maybe detailed more in Luke 21. Now, Luke's going to say the same thing, but it's going to be a little different. And what will be the sign of your coming? Meaning, okay, if this is going to get torn down, how will we know when you're coming? Well, how will we know if you're going to tear it down? Then when are you going to do this? And of the end of the age. So they've got his coming and the end of the age and the tearing down. So they got three events right there. So he's going to answer these questions. Luke is going to give some more details. Here it is. First of all, he's going to talk about that here. If you look on your chart right here, up here, I've got over on this, on the left side, 165 BC or 70 AD. These are what they're talking about, the cultural historical events. Then the early signs or the first 3.5 years of the tribulation. What's going to be like during the first 3.5 years of the tribulation? Then the Antichrist is revealed. And then there's going to be the persecution of the Jews or the church, and then the rapture, and then the actual return of Christ right there. And my microphone keeps falling off right here. Okay, so you can kind of follow along with that. So he says, watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Christ and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. So right here, here's your signs that you're not in the end times. There's going to be people trying to deceive you. Many are going to come and say they're Christ or they're the Messiah. Many people will be deceived and follow false Christ and Messiah. And they did that during the first century. They've been doing it all along. You'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. Ah, there's a war. Right. That's history. There's going to be deception in history. Just general history. Anywhere in history. Drop yourself anywhere in a time machine and drop into history. There's people deceiving, people manipulating others, people saying there's some kind of God manifestation, God's leader, and there's going to be wars and rumors of political problems with nations. This must be the end times. No, this is history. This is nothing to see here, folks. It's just your newspaper. Do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Right? I mean, you can't see anywhere. That is not the end. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There'll be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Now, you can say, like I'm saying here, that's just general history. There's going to be earthquakes. And you see, every time there's an earthquake, you see, Jesus says there'll be earthquakes. Now, Jesus says there's going to be earthquakes throughout history. If there's a war and an earthquake on the same day, you know what that means? Nothing. It means nothing, because that's the way history is. Or it could be, some would say, he's talking about what it's going to be like during the first three and a half, the early birth pains, maybe right here, which will include the same thing. But that will also extend all the way through history. So even Paul says in Romans, the suffering we're experiencing is the birth pains. Creation is giving birth to the kingdom of God. And so Paul was talking about creation being in birth pains in 50, 60 AD. So it's like, that's 2,000 years. So it's like, this could be talking about all the way back to the beginning of time, where we're trying to get to this place of the kingdom of God coming. Of course, it's going to intensify right here. So I think he's talking about general history, but that doesn't, you know, deny that it's going to intensify right there before things start to happen. So, no, I mean, really, he said nothing except you guys have no idea what you're talking about, because they're ready to enter the kingdom. And he says there's going to be wars, earthquakes, famine, all kinds of people saying I'm Christ. He says all that is a sign. We're not even close. Okay, verse 9, then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. Okay, so you got these birth pains, you know, all these early things are general history, but then you'll be handed over to be put to death. Now that can talk about here if you're talking about Christians, or it could be talking about here if you're talking about Jews. I don't think we're talking about the second half of the tribulation yet. He's talking to believers who are going to suffer for Christ. They're not going to suffer for being a Jew. But if you remember, if we take our little timeline here and extend this a little different, here's your seven-year period. We go back to 30 AD, and you got the first century, the first century of the church. This, he's talking about this. If he's talking directly to his disciples, you will be handed over and persecuted in your lifetime. So again, there's going to be Christian persecution here. But these men are going to be persecuted, and that persecution is going to extend all the way through church history. It's going to intensify here, and they're going to experience it here. So keep that in mind. Be careful how you read it. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. Now again, all nations hating you because of Christ is not a Jewish reference, because they're not hated because of Christ, maybe because of the Messiah, some spiritual background. But the Christians are hated because of their association with Christ, because they are Christians. The Jewish nation could be persecuted by the spiritual forces, because they're the ones who are going to produce the Messiah and all these promises, even if they know it or if they don't know it. I mean, Israel's got a covenant, and they may know it, they may not know it. They're moving through history with this covenant that God is going to be faithful to the covenant. So the spiritual forces may bring persecution, but they themselves may deny the Christ. They may not even know the Christ. So again, if it's a Jewish reference, it could be, but it seems like that'd be a Christian reference. But all nations hating you because of me, at that time many will turn away. So I'm thinking right here, we could start here, that you'll be persecuted, but then we move into, I'm going to say, now I'm making the move right here, and again, you've got to think about this, that this is all making sense. We're moving into the first 3.5 year period right here. He says, then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. That is what Paul's going to refer to as the rebellion, the turning away, where they switch allegiance. They're traitors. They're betraying their side. It's a term military. You're fighting in the military, and all of a sudden you say, I give up. I'll just start fighting for you. You turn and start fighting for the enemy against your own side because you know you're going to live. That's kind of the word. It's a betrayal. At that time, many will turn away from the faith. That's the falling away Paul refers to. And will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. Now watch this. He who stands firm to the end will be saved. Saved, again, you can decide. If again, I just finishing a book, I'm trying to make this point in the book, is it's classic cases. Paul was delivered from the lion's mouth and then went and got his head cut off. He said, I was delivered from the lion's mouth, but I'm going to get killed. It's like he was talking about failing Christ. I did not fail to proclaim Christ to Nero's court. Well, they're going to cut your head off. We're all going to die. No one's going to get out of here alive. Well, there's no deliverance from death. You're going to die. But your choice, are you going to be delivered from the forces of evil? Are you going to collapse? And so when it says you'll all be saved, that doesn't mean, especially during this 3.5 year time, that you're going to be delivered from death. It means you'll be saved from evil. You'll be able to testify, and watch where this verse goes. People dying, you'll be able to testify, and if you make it over here, there is going to be the coming of the Lord where you'll have the rapture, you'll meet the Lord in the air. So, those who endure to the end of their life or the end of the persecution, they'll be saved, not physically necessarily. At that time, many will turn away and many false prophets will appear. Verse 12, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. Now watch this. Verse 14, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Now, who is doing the persecuting of those who are associated with Christ? The nations. And who is hearing the testimony of Christ and his kingdom? The nations. And how are they hearing it? By those they are persecuting. I mean, it's not what you want to share in Sunday school. It's not one thing you want to do at an altar call. Who wants to accept Christ and then go to the guillotine? Raise your hand. Now stand up. Now come front. Now put your head on the blade. It's like, that's not an altar call. I mean, it could be, but you're going to do a little bit, kind of polish it up a little bit. But these people, it's like, and they're going to, because, again, you can, a lot of people say, and the gospel is preached to the kingdom. They say, well, that's the 144,000 Jews that are preaching. Okay, that could be, but they're going to be sealed over here. Or they bring that 144,000 up over here, 144,000. These are the people that get born again after the church is raptured, before any of this starts taking place. Now, that's great news, because that means you and me will never see this. We'll never have to get our head cut off. Unless you live in China or Russia or some other communistic state or ancient Rome, or it's like, you'll just be safe if you live in the United States between 1950 and 2020. But nonetheless, these 144,000 being born again Christians right after the rapture that are going to go out and testify the world, you can play that card if you want to, but you've got some major pastoral problems here. You've got a bunch of people that didn't go in the rapture because they're unbelievers. Then all of a sudden, they all find your little notebooks that you wrote, them little letters. You know, the reason I'm not here anymore is because I was raptured away. And they're like, oh my God, I'm going to become a super believer and start watching Superbook, and they all of a sudden become great in their faith. That'd be great in a movie, but it's like, you understand how hard it is for you to mature in West Des Moines. In a time of peace, they're going to get born again while they're killing Christians, if they can find them, and they start with zero. So if there's zero Christians on the earth, that means, again, this doesn't mean I'm right, but you understand the mathematical complication of this and the whole system of the church that Jesus Christ has established. Says, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And right when the Super Bowl comes, I'm going to take you out and you'll never have to play a game in your life. Then I'm going to take a bunch of rookies that don't even know who I am and they're going to testify to the Antichrist. What? I'm going to rapture my varsity and go down to the elementary and bring an elementary PE class in to play the state championship. Because these people are going to have to go with, there's zero. There's no pastors. There's no churches. There's no teachers. There's no helps ministry. There's nothing. There's every church has now been taken over by the Antichrist. The Christians are all gone. There's no Christians in hiding in a cave somewhere, because if they were, they would have been raptured. So you're starting off at ground zero. And by the time you get to the Antichrist revealing himself, they're going to have gone through the most persecution. There's going to be hundreds of them under the altar that were persecuted. And they're supposed to testify to the nations. Now, you don't want, I mean, that'd be great, but understand that's a major miracle. You couldn't do that if you took Israel out of Egypt and spent 40 years training them in the wilderness. You'd still have two, Joshua and Caleb. And that's after 40 years of education with Jesus, or with the Lord in the tabernacle with Moses and the priesthood, disciplining them in the wilderness. After 40 years, two. Even Moses is like, no. So this becomes more and more ridiculous to me, that here's the rapture, and then the 144,000 go and they start ministering to the world. It's like, how? Anything's possible. But the logistics of that, the fact that we wipe out the church that Jesus has been building for 2,000 years and then do the greatest work of ministry without the church. I think this, the falling away, we get rid of all the that are just there for the coffee type things, and these are the ones who are going to mature, and they're going to face the persecution, and they're going to testify. The nations are going to come against them for the name of Christ. They're going to testify to the nation saying, well, here it is. Here's what the testimony is going to be. It says, I'll turn away. It says, verse 14, and the gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. Until right here, and this is not the end right here. This is the beginning of the last 7 years. The church goes here, they're being persecuted, and right here, the sign of the Son of Man appears right here. Boom, they're gone, and then the end will, now we're there. Now we're going to unleash the wrath of God. This was just, see, this is the Jews in the temple. This is the Jews getting deceived by the Antichrist. This is the church, their final moments of testimony. Boom, and now the end. And now, if I'm right, watch where the next verse goes. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea, those are the Jews. See, we just switched from Christians. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to see the abomination standing in the temple. That Paul says that. You see it in Revelation. Daniel says, in fact, he says, I'm just telling you what Daniel says. In fact, when Paul says in Thessalonians, according to the Lord's own word, for years, I'd say, I wish I would have known. I wonder what the Lord, what was some prophecy he gave Paul? Paul's teaching doctrine, and he says, according to the Lord's own word, it's pretty clear to me right now what he's referring to. Again, this is not absolute, but it's like, if Paul says, according to, and he's quoting in 48 AD, and he's telling them, according to the Lord's own word, and he's already taught them, they've already got notes, they've already got the material, according to the Lord's own word, what's he referring to? Matthew 24, where the Lord just taught eschatology. Now, the Lord just teaches eschatology, but over here, Paul's going to get a little whisper in his ear. It's like Paul is a rabbi. He's used to reading documents, and he's got Matthew's document. He's read it. He's taught it, and he tells him, according to the Lord's own word, and the Lord's own word, who's the Lord quoting? The Lord's quoting Daniel. So Daniel lines up with Matthew. Matthew is what Paul's referring to when he's teaching the Thessalonians. Potentially. Do you see how he did that? I mean, maybe he got a special revelation from God. But I think this would be in existence. Okay, so those are in Judea. The Jews are fleeing. And he has spoken through the prophet Daniel. That's that setting up some kind of an altar, sacrificing on the Temple Mount. Let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Now here's where you can pray. Interestingly, you can't pray that this doesn't happen, but he does say you can pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath, which is just, you just have to take that information and put it on the shelf and say, this is determined to happen. But Jesus says the best thing you can do is pray that it's not winter where you're going to freeze. It'd be nice if it was on a cool spring day and on a Sabbath. A Sabbath is going to make things very complicated for the Jews. So it'd be best if it happened like on a Monday in the spring. Now, you can pray about that. It's like, so this is set. You can't avoid this. But there is some flexibility. I mean, it's just. I'm not saying, so that what that means is, I'm just telling you, there. It's not a conflict. It's just this is set. But within that set, and is Jesus' words just vain, empty words? I think he's saying, you know, if you want to, it's like, this sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. You should probably pray that it's a nice weather, and that's not a Sabbath. So we can work with that. I can't get you out of this, but I can give you a nice day. Let no one on the roof of his house go down to get anything or out of the house. Let no one on the field going to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be. Verse 20, pray that your flight will not take place in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great distress. Right here. See, right here. This was great distress for the church. But right here, this is going to be great distress. I lost my place again. Okay, yeah, there. For then there'll be a time of great distress unequaled from the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. Now here it says the world. We saw earlier in Daniel it says the beginning of the nations. But here he says, Jesus, clever, beginning of the world. Because maybe you better just drown in the flood of Noah than to live through. Because they're going to seek death. They're going to seek death, according to Revelation, and not be able to find it. You know why? They got the vaccination. No. I know, that's not right. But it's just funny. Okay. If those days, okay, until now, and never to be equaled again. So again, this is talking about, again, this is the wrath of God. The trumpets, the bowls, this is the wrath of God being poured out. I mean, he's destroying the planet. And then he goes on and says, if those days had not been shortened or terminated, no one would survive. Now, when it says shorten or terminated, it means there's a place he's going to cut it short, or maybe he's got a point where he's going to come down here and end it after 7 years, after 1,260 days, he's going to come down. Because he says if they were allowed to continue, and again, this is Revelation makes it very clear. If you let this go right here, you have 1,260 days, and Jesus doesn't come back by 1,275 days or something, there's nobody left. You're all dead. I mean, you haven't had water for 2 months. I mean, the sun is scorching. You just got dead bodies just cooking in the baked earth. So if Jesus doesn't come back right here and stop this, he says right here, there would be no one left. I mean, he says, I'm going to make it so bad. For then there'll be great distress unequaled to the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. If those days had not been cut short or terminated or cut off, no one would survive. But for the sake of the elect, those days will be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect. If that were possible. And that may tie into the great sign. God is going to send a great delusion. That may be the great delusion right there. They're performing things that this must be God. So there's going to be a time of false prophets. If this is the time right here, and there's false prophets trying to deceive people. But he's going to say right here, and this is important to understand, how because this sets it up. This sets it all up. He says, so if anyone tells you, there he is in the desert, that Christ is in the desert. And this is not important to us right now, but it's going to be very, it's going to be something that you can sink your teeth into in this time. Oh, he's out in the desert. And what do they do in the desert? Historically, what they would do in the desert is when a Messiah, a rebel, a leader would want to get his troops organized, they'd meet somewhere in the desert. In fact, Jesus is going to do that when he comes up out of Basra. He's going to go meet the 144,000 and he's going to march with them. I mean, that's another story. But they would gather their troops and then they'd march on a city from the wilderness. That's how they'd attack. So if you're a Messiah, the Messiah is forming his troops in the wilderness. He says, that's not me. Or the other option, if anyone says, look, there's the Christ, there he is, do not believe it, for false Christ, okay, will appear and perform many signs. Okay, see that you have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is in the desert, do not go out. Or here he is in the inner rooms. The inner rooms are the inner rooms of the Temple Mount. That's where the government would meet. Like when the Sanhedrin met to try Stephen or they met to try Jesus, they'd meet in the inner rooms and they'd have their court case. So if you're going to come in as a great political leader, you're going to arise out of one of those inner rooms. You're going to be in an inner room where Congress is meeting or the Sanhedrin's meeting or the government, the United Nations is meeting, and they're going to come out and say, we've got our new leader. You're either out in the wilderness getting a rebel troop set or you're in there politically playing a game. He says, I'm not going to come out of the wilderness like a military leader. I'm not going to come out of some chamber somewhere like a great political leader. He do not go out. Here he is. What? Now here's how he's going to come. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. So will the coming of the Son of Man. So that's this right here. He's going to come, and it's not just going to be like, you know, a ball of fire. It's going to be like lightning from the east to the west. It's going to cover the whole earth. Now, this ties into your sixth seal when it talks about seeing the throne of God and the wrath of the Lamb. And it says the sky is gone. The sun is gone. And you can read in Revelation and other places, the sun turns color and the moon is dim. It's because you've got something brighter in the universe or in the atmosphere than the sun that's a distant planet. You've got the glory of God seated on the throne, sitting right here. Does that make sense? It's not like all the stars just fall to the earth. It looks like they do because you at night you can't. In fact, there may not even be night. It's just like the glory of, he doesn't like, oh, it's time to go to bed and shuts the light off. The glory of God is here. And so that's how you'll know he's come back. And you won't have to tell anybody. And in the sixth seal, that's when the nations say, hide us from him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Now watch what they say here. For as lightning comes from the east and is visible even in the west, so will it be at the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures gather. In other words, that's how easy it is. How do you find the dead carcass? I don't know. Well, just look up. Oh, look, they're all circling right there. It must be over there. I mean, how do you know? Look up. There's the vultures. There's the dead body. Now, again, it's like people try to make sense of this, and maybe you should. Who's the dead body? What's the vultures? Well, this is simply saying it's going to be as obvious as lightning, or it's going to be as obvious finding a dead body. I don't even know where the dead body's at. Well, what do? You just look up. There's the vultures circling the dead body. It's right there. And you just look up, everyone will be able to look up and see the vultures, everyone can see the lightning. It's just going to be circling right there. That will be the Son of Man. It's back. Watch, immediately after the distress of those times, right there, here's the Son of Man. Boom, there he is. Like circling vultures, he's in the atmosphere. The sun will be darkened. Why? Because he's in the atmosphere. The moon will not give its light because there's something brighter in the atmosphere. The stars will fall from the sky. Now, again, if they're falling from the sky, where are they falling to? Which direction is down in the universe? Are they falling to the earth? If they do, just one star is going to take us all out. There's no more anything. And the star hits the earth. And, well, that's nothing. Never mind. Earth's gone. I mean, scientifically. So, again, I'm going to have to make that poetic. The stars just fell out of the sky. And the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Now, the heavenly bodies could be the planets, or we could be talking about the powers that they represent. Again, I'm just throwing this out there. The spiritual forces, because when Jesus comes into here, into the atmosphere, he's coming back into where the high place or the prince of the power of the air is, and all of a sudden, because Revelation says, and Satan lost his place and was cast down the earth at this point. So the heavenly powers, the rulers, all the demons and powers there that are controlling the world and controlling history, their whole kingdom is shaken because the Lord is now back in the presence. At that time, At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And all, watch, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. So again, it's not secret, it's not invisible, it's great glory. They'll be able to look and say, he's seated on the throne, hide us. And one of the reasons why they can maybe say, hide us from him who sits on the throne, the wrath of the Lamb, is because everybody that was being martyred is telling them, he's coming. You understand, we're just 42 to 48 months away from Jesus Christ coming, or short of that, we're months away. They will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And here it is, verse 31, what are you going to do with this? And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. In other words, when he comes back and the nations mourn, for some reason, he's sending out the angels, and there's people scattered all around the heavens, or if you want to call it the earth. No, there's a gathering of people that are being gathered to the Lord. We are going to be, same word. When Paul says we will be gathered to meet him in the air, it's the ideal of being gathered to meet the Messiah. If you're being gathered to be brought back to Israel, or if you're the church being gathered at the rapture, we've got parallel verses going here, if we can accept that. And then goes, now learn a lesson from the fig tree. As soon as the twigs gets tender and its leaves come out, you know that the summer is near. Again, I think that's when you start seeing these events, it's like no one knows the day or hour. I mean, you got to hold to that. But if you see the Antichrist, if you see the persecution, and you can identify the seals, and then he reveals himself, says on the Temple Mount as God, it's like, I mean, you know when spring is coming, even if you just woke up, go outside, oh, look, the buds are here. If you just pick up a newspaper, it's like, oh my gosh, this is not just the cycling of events. We've actually crossed over into the last 7 years. I think that's what he's saying. It's like, again, he's already told you all the disqualifiers. This is nothing. This is just history. Wars and rumors of wars and famines and earthquakes. But when you see the buds on the tree, you know we're near. You know it's near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Now there's that word generation. This generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Now we've got a problem in Matthew because these things haven't happened yet. And generation, it means a generation. It means a cycle. It means 40 years. It's a period. It's somewhere between 30 AD and 70 AD. Now, what's he mean by that? When you go to read Luke, if we read Luke, and we'll read Luke next week, this makes a lot more sense in Luke, because Luke is going to talk about, he's going to talk about this, but Luke is going to be talking about the years from, well, he's going to be talking about these years right here. Luke, in the gospel, when Jesus, because Jesus, he said more than this. This is him taking the whole thing and putting it into a written document, Matthew. Jesus said these things, but it's not exclusively verbatim, word for word, the whole thing, because Luke is going to say the same thing, but there's going to be more, and he's going to spend time, Jesus is actually going to spend time talking about this period right here. And so when it says this generation will not pass away, the answers are that it is like this. One, the Jews are a generation of people. They're the genealogy. They're the genes of the Jews. They will not pass away until these things happen. So the Jews will still be here. They're trying to make it fit. That's really not that's not what he's saying. Or 1948, when you start seeing the Jews come back in the land in 1948. And that's why 40 plus 1948 is 1988. So that's why everybody read the book in 1988, why Jesus is coming back in 1988. 40 reasons why. But then it was 88 reasons why. Do you remember, Tony? 88, what was it? Right, because it's such a good seller and he didn't come back, so they rewrote it. They made a mistake. They found another reason, and they didn't get as big a sales, but they did. They wrote 89 reasons why Jesus came back in 1989. There'll be many false prophets. Because they're all based that on 1948. Then you take, well, then you take 1948 and you add 70 to it because the generation is maybe 70 years. Now you got 8, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 9, is that right? 2018? Is that right? Okay, so 2018, and that you know, that came in. I mean, there's people trying. It could mean that when the generation sees this coming back, or it could mean this right here. He's just got to talk about the buds. When you start seeing these buds right here, it's close. It's right around the corner. If you see these things, you're not gonna pass away. You're gonna see the end. Your generation is seeing the end of those things. So it could be a 40-year generation, and that's going to apply to Luke very clearly. It could be the Jews. I don't think so. People have tried 1948 long enough where we've proven that's not going to work. But I think it goes back to this. When you see this start taking place, so this is kind of, we talk about tonight, we talk about events. The events that we saw are just right, some of these things right here, and we're going to overlap them. Again, we're going to do Luke next week and keep going. I'll pray, and if you've got any questions or something, which I'm sure you don't, or any corrections or something, we can certainly spend some time. I'll pray and you're free to go. Father, we do thank you for the truth. We thank you for your word that we can look into these things. We do ask that we would handle them carefully. We do ask that we'd find them as a source of encouragement and not fear or scare tactics, but Father, a source of preparing our souls so we'd be able to stand firm and do the very thing you've called us to do, and that is testify to you and of your coming kingdom. We ask that we'd live in a way that does the same thing, that testifies to your glory and your honor as we make decisions, as we speak, as we live our lives. But Father, especially when you get a chance to face persecution, we ask that we'd be delivered again from the fears of failing, the fears of the lion, and be able to stand firm and testify to you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.